Switzerland Conquests. Chapter 9. Reaction Preparing. The convention, drawn up under the mediation of Bern, stipulated that the change should take place only in the city and parish of Neuchâtel. Must the rest of the country remain in darkness? This was not Farel's wish, and the zeal of the citizens, in its first fervor, effectually seconded him. They visited the surrounding villages, exhorting some, combating others. Those who were compelled to labor with their hands during the day went thither at night. "Now I am informed," writes the governor to the princess, "that they are working at a reformation night and day." George de Rive, in alarm, convoked the magistrates of all the districts in the earldom. These good folks believed that their consciences, as well as their places, depended upon Madame de Longueville. Affrighted at the thought of freely receiving a new conviction from the Word of God, they were quite ready to accept it from the Countess as they would a new impost, a sad helotism, in which religion springs from the soil, instead of descending from heaven. "We desire to live and die under the protection of Our Lady," said the magistrates to the Lord of Rive, "without changing the ancient faith, until it be so ordered by her." Rome, even after her fall, could not receive a deeper insult. These assurances of fidelity and the absence of the Bernese restored de Rive's confidence, and he secretly prepared a reaction among the nobles and the lower classes. There is in every historical catastrophe, in the fall of great establishments, and in the spectacle of their ruins, something which excites and improves the mind. This was what happened at the period in question. Some were more zealous for popery after its fall than in its day of power. The clergy gliding into the houses said mass to a few friends mysteriously called together around a temporary altar. If a child was born, the priest noiselessly arrived, breathed on the infant, made the sign of the cross on its forehead and breast, and baptized it according to the Roman ritual. Thus they were rebuilding in secret what had been overthrown in the light of day. At length a counter-revolution was agreed upon, and Christmas Day was selected for the restoration of Roman Catholicism. While the Christian songs of joy should be rising to heaven, the partisans of Rome were to rush into the church, expel the heretical assembly, overthrow the pulpit and the holy table, restore the images, and celebrate the Mass in triumph. Such was the plan of the Nuff Catalan Vespers. The plot got wind. Deputies from Bern arrived at Neuchâtel on the very eve of the festival. "You must see to this," said they to the governor. "If the Reformed are attacked, we, their Coburgers, will protect them with all our power." The conspirators laid down their arms, and the Christmas hymns were not disturbed. This signal deliverance augmented the devotion and zeal of the friends of the gospel. Already Emmerbanen of Serrières, where Farel had one day landed from a small boat, ascending the pulpit, had said to his parishioners, "If I have been a good priest, I desire by the grace of God to be a still better pastor." It was necessary for these words to be heard from every pulpit. Farel recommenced a career of labors, fatigues, and struggles, which the actions of the apostles and missionaries alone can equal. Towards the end of the year 1530, he crossed the mountain in the middle of winter, entered the church of Valangin, went into the pulpit, and began to preach at the very moment that Guillemette de Vergy was coming to Mass. She endeavored to shut the reformer's mouth, but in vain, and the aged and noble dowager retired precipitately, saying, "I do not think this is according to the old gospels. If there are any new ones that encourage it, I am quite amazed." The people of Valangin embraced the gospel. The affrighted lieutenant ran to Neuchâtel, thence to Bern, and on the February 11th laid his complaint before the council. But all was useless. "Why," said their excellencies of Bern to him, "why should you disturb the water of the river? Let it flow freely on." Farel immediately turned to the parishes on the slopes between the lake and Mount Jura. At Courcelles a fanatic crowd, well armed and led on by the curate of Neuchâtel, rushed into the church where the minister was preaching, and he did not escape without a wound. At Bivet, the abbot John of Livron and his monks collected a numerous body of friends, surrounded the church, and having thus completed the blockade, entered the building, dragged the minister from the pulpit, and drove him out with blows and insults. Each time he reappeared, they pursued him as far as Auvernier with stones and gunshots. While Farel was thus preaching in the plain, he sent one of his brethren into the valley. It was John de Belly, a man of good family from Crest in Dauphiny. Beyond Valangin, at a little distance from Fontaine, on the left side of the road to Serrières, was a stone that remains to this day. Here in the open air, as if in a magnificent temple, this herald of the gospel began to proclaim salvation by grace. Before him stretched the declivity of Chaumont, dotted with the pretty villages of Fenin, Villers, Sole, and Savigny, and beyond, where the mountains fell away, might be seen the distant and picturesque chain of the Alps. The most zealous of his hearers entreated him to enter the church. He did so, but suddenly the priest and his curate arrived with great noise. They proceeded to the pulpit, dragged Belly down, and then turning to the women and young persons of the place, excited them to beat him and drive him away. Jean de Belly returned to Neuchâtel, hooted and bruised, like his friend after the affair at Valangin. But these evangelists followed the traces of the Apostle Paul, whom neither whips nor scourges could arrest. De Belly often returned to Fontaine. The Mass was abolished ere long in this village. Belly was its pastor for 27 years. His descendants have more than once exercised the ministry there, and now they form the most numerous family of agriculturists in the place. Farrell, after evangelizing the shores of the lake to the south of Neuchâtel, had gone to the north and preached at St. Blaise. The populace, stirred up by the priests and the lieutenant, had fallen upon him, and Farrell escaped from their hands, severely beaten, spitting blood, and scarcely to be recognized. His friends had thrown him hurriedly into a boat, and conveyed him to Morat, where his wounds detained him for some time. At the report of this violence, the reformed Neufchatelans felt their blood boil. If the lieutenant, the priest, and his flock have bruised the body of Christ's servant, which is truly the altar of the living God, why should they spare dead idols? Immediately they rush to St. Blaise, throw down the images, and do the same at the Abbey of Fontaine-André, a sanctuary of the ancient worship. The images still existed at Valangin, but their last hour was about to strike. A Frenchman, Anthony Marquart, had been nominated pastor of Neuchâtel. Treading in Farrell's footsteps, he repaired with a few of the citizens to Valangin on the June 14th, a great holiday in that town. Scarcely had they arrived when a numerous crowd pressed around the minister, listening to his words. The canons, who were on the watch in their houses, and Madame de Vergy and M. de Bellegarde from their towers, sought how they could make a diversion against this heretical preaching. They could not employ force because of Bern. They had recourse to a brutal expedient, worthy of the darkest days of popery, and which, by insulting the minister, might divert, they imagined, the attention of the people, and change it into shouts and laughter. A canon, assisted by the countess's coachman, went to the stables and took thence 2 animals, which they led to the spot where Marquart was preaching. We will throw a veil over this scene. It is one of those disgraceful subjects that the pen of history refuses to transcribe. But never did punishment follow closer upon crime. The conscience of the hearers was aroused at the sight of this infamous spectacle. The torrent, that such a proceeding was intended to check, rushed out of its channel. The indignant people, undertaking the defense of that religion which their opponents had wished to insult, entered the church like an avenging wave. The ancient windows were broken, the shields of the lords were demolished, the relics scattered about, the books torn, the images thrown down, and the altar overturned. But this was not enough. The popular wave, after sweeping out the church, flowed back again, and dashed against the canons' houses. Their inhabitants fled in consternation into the forests, and everything was destroyed in their dwellings. Gomet de Vergy and M. de Bellegarde, agitated and trembling behind their battlements, repented, but too late, of their monstrous expedient. They were the only ones who had not yet felt the popular vengeance. Their restless eyes watched the motions of the indignant townspeople. The work is completed. The last house is sacked. The burghers consult together. Oh, horror! They turn towards the castle, they ascend the hill, they draw near. Is then the abode of the noble counts of Arbig about to be laid waste? But no! We come, said the delegate standing near the gate of the castle. We are come to demand justice for the outrage committed against religion and its minister. They are permitted to enter, and the trembling countess orders the poor wretches to be punished who had acted solely by her orders. But at the same time she sends deputies to Bern, complaining of the great insults that had been offered her. Bern declared that the reformed should pay for the damage, but that the countess should grant them the free exercise of their worship. Jacques Valuzet, a native of Champagne, was the first pastor of Valangin. A little later we shall see new struggles at the foot of Mount Jura. Thus was the Reformation established at Valangin, as it had been at Neuchâtel. The 2 capitals of these mountains were gained to the gospel. ere long it received a legal sanction. Francis, Marquis of Rothelin, son of the Duchess of Longueville, arrived in the Principality in March 1531, with the intention of playing on this small theater the part of a Francis I. But he soon found out that there are revolutions which an irresistible hand has accomplished, and that must be submitted to. Rothelin excluded from the estates of the earldom the canons who had hitherto formed the first power, and replaced them by 4 bannerets and 4 burgesses. Then, availing himself of the principle that all abandoned property falls to the state, he laid his hands upon their rich heritage, and proclaimed freedom of conscience throughout the whole country. All the necessary forms having been observed with Madame, the politic M. derived became reformed also. Such was the support Rome received from the state, to which she had looked for her deliverance. A great energy characterized the reformation of French Switzerland, and this is shown by the events we have just witnessed. Men have attributed to Farel this distinctive feature of his work, but no man has ever created his own times. It is always, on the contrary, the times that create the man. The greater the epoch, the less do individualities prevail in it. All the good contained in the events we have just related came from that almighty spirit, of which the strongest men are but weak instruments. All the evil proceeded from the character of the people, and indeed, it was almost always popery that began these scenes of violence. Farel submitted to the influence of his times, rather than the times received his. A great man may be the personification and the type of the epoch for which God destines him. He is never its creator. But it is time to quit the Jura and its beautiful valleys, brightened by the vernal sun, to direct our steps towards the Alps of German Switzerland, along which thick clouds and horrible tempests are gathering. The free and courageous people, who dwell there below the eternal glaciers, or on the smiling banks of the lakes, daily assume a fiercer aspect, and the collision threatens to be sudden, violent, and terrible. We have just been witnessing a glorious conquest. A dreadful catastrophe awaits us.